It was a day of celebration and significance even greater than today. All the elders and leaders assembled, all the people crammed in to see this great building, the first of its kind, one of a kind. They all stood outside and watched as the temple was filled with the furnishings and draperies and what have yous, which bestowed on this beautiful piece of architecture the meaning it was due. And then, into the temple, the priests carried the ark, which not only held the tablets Moses received on Mount Sinai, but was also where God promised to dwell. They carried this box, confident that with it they had God with them. And then they placed it in the heart of the great temple, the room called the Holy of Holies, the center where almost no one would ever go, for what it held was too special now, too holy for us mere mortals, like your grandmother's china cabinet, but even more so. And then Solomon, the king, stood outside and prepared to give the dedication speech. The temple would be the defining work of his life, so, you know, better not screw this up. You can imagine being there when a hush falls over the crowd as Solomon approaches the podium. The Lord has said he would dwell in thick darkness. The words echo in the air. Your friend leans over and whispers in your ear, duh. God dwells in thick darkness. Yeah, we know. And your ill-mannered friend wasn't just talking about the times God had literally hidden in a dark cloud. No, it's more than that. God's dwelling in thick darkness nature is about as well known as Sandra's ability to sing and Bill's ability to do other things. The mystery of God, the inability to put your finger on who or what or where God is, on if God is, it's captured the minds of philosophers and armchair theologians since long before the first pieces of wood were cut for that temple. The mystery that is God, it is the subject of many of our prayers and the reason so many of us find it hard to pray. It is the truth exploited by prophets, false prophets seeking profit, and adored by artists comfortable with uncertainty. It is the truth that frustrates the rest of us. God is, at his, her, its most basic essence, impenetrably, unceasingly, completely mysterious. God dwells in darkness, Solomon proclaims. Yeah, we know. But, he says, turning to God, I have built you an exalted house, a place for you to dwell in forever. The temple Solomon built was many things, an expression of devotion, a symbol of power, a public works project that bolstered relationships between nations. But it was also an attempt to demystify God, to tame the wild, to put the genie in a bottle, to avoid being stuck with total mystery. With the temple, Solomon tried to put God in a box. Actually, a box within a box. In pinning God down, he tried to peek into the thick darkness, and he did. He shined a small light onto the mystery of God, but maybe not in the way he'd planned. Let's talk about Martin Luther. Early in his career as a priest and teacher, Luther also got the sense that God dwelled in thick darkness. Piercing that darkness became an obsession for him, in much the same way it was for Solomon. But there was also a darker side to Luther's search. See, he felt like he was going it alone. He felt like it was him against the world, and not in the maverick sort of way we admire now. This was long before the romanticized American cowboy. No, to go it alone for Luther was frightening. He had friends and colleagues and other searchers, but they all seemed more content with the mystery. Whereas for Luther, the mystery filled him with terror. Terror because he wasn't just in the dark about who God was, but he was in the dark about God's judgment, about whether God thought Luther was good enough, and Luther never felt good enough. So every step of the way, Luther felt more and more alone and more like the world, like fate, like God was against him. It can feel that way, right? Like it's just you against the world? Like you've got friends and colleagues and bosses who care, a family who loves you, but there is still a sense in which you're on this path, you're trying to make a dent, and it feels sometimes like you're at it alone. And then you get pushback, or some misfortune strikes, or the bank account runs dry, and or the enormity of the tasks ahead, or the weight of life itself just gets so big that you don't only feel like you're alone in the world, but it feels like it's you against the world. Like it's this battle, and you've got some cheerleaders, some support crew, maybe, but man, it can get overwhelming. And the whole God in thick darkness thing, well, that doesn't make it any easier, does it? You think maybe I should pray, but to who? God feels so distant sometimes, so mysterious, as likely to laugh back at your request or smite you for it, as God is to just remain silent, churning within that darkness. So you do life alone. You against the world. It's dangerous to assume someone's mental or emotional state 500 years after the fact, I know. But I think that's how Luther felt in life. Like it was him against the world. Maybe even him against God. But in this story of the temple, there's this little bit of light that shines on the thick darkness. This little bit of mystery revealed. You get a glimpse into who God is, and it makes all the difference. It made all the difference for poor Luther. The Lord has said he would dwell in thick darkness, Solomon proclaimed. And I have built you an exalted house, a place for you to dwell in forever. Which of course begs the question, why? Not why did Solomon do it, but why did God enter into the temple? I don't care how nice the temple was, how shiny the ark or beautiful the woodwork. God dwells in thick darkness. That's God's nature. That's how God is supposed to be. Mystery is who God is. So why does God go along with the temple? Why does God go in a box? The creator of everything, the one who is over and above all, gets boxed into an exalted house, a place to dwell in forever? Sounds as much a prison as a palace to me. So why did God do it? Well, I think it's for us. God doesn't need the temple. God was just happy out in the tent. And you know, God didn't need the tent. God was fine around the people. Actually, God didn't even need the people. The people needed God. So God showed up because the people needed God. They needed God to not be so distant. They needed God to not be so mysterious and unknowable and unapproachable. So God came down and spoke and made promises and said that God would be in a specific place so that they could go and be with God there. It was a tangible act of limiting the divine. And it was all for them. For them, God dwelled in a roaming tent and then in a stationary temple, a box in a box. And then God became a person. Because we needed a person. God didn't need Jesus, we did. God didn't need to take on this mortal life and make friends and make enemies and teach a bunch of dunderheaded disciples and become a scapegoat goat for our failings and the victim of our hate and die and be buried and rise. God didn't need Jesus, we did. We do. God's nature, God's very essence is mystery beyond comprehension. And yet again and again, God limits, diminishes, empties the divine self so that we might come to peek at God, so that we might experience what should be impossible to experience, so that we might know that we are loved. God enters into the temple. God is born. God dies for us. God is for us. It may not be the truth that Solomon thought he was extracting from the divine mystery when he built the temple, but it's the truth we get. And when we get it, oh, it makes all the difference. For Luther, it happened while reading Romans one day. God is for us. For St. Paul, it happened after a blinding experience on a road. God is for us. For Dietrich Bonhoeffer, it happened listening to a gospel choir in Harlem. God is for us. For Lutheran peace activist Lema Gaboe, it happened among trauma victims in Liberia. God is for us. That moment when each realized that God is for us. God is for you. For me, it happened way back in Sunday school, and then again in confirmation and seminary, and whenever I receive bread and wine at the altar and dip my finger in the water of the font and hear the word from this place and am showered by grace in this community. It was never a one-time realization for me. More of a slow soaking in. Besides, I guess it takes a lot of attempts to sneak through the thick darkness I have up here. Or in here. But I know. I know deep down that God is for us. There is so much mystery about life, about this world, and about God. So much mystery that will always remain. And that's kind of frightening. But there is some light, a bit of truth. God is for us. God is for you. And the truth, that truth, shall set you free. It freed Martin Luther. Today really isn't about 95 complaints posted on a door 500 years ago that only make sense in context. Today's celebration isn't even about the way the church broke apart. That's something we should repent of as much as celebrate. Today, we celebrate the freeing truth that Martin Luther and so many others helped open our eyes to, that God is for us, that God is for you. In a world where it often feels like you're going it alone, God is for you. In a world where it can feel like it's you against the world, God is for you. When you are overcome with grief, when temptation or sin are stronger than willpower, when you feel aimless, like you have no purpose or calling worthy of getting out of bed, God is for you. Or when you feel called, but too scared, too anxious, too poor, too young, too old, too tired, too whatever, God is for you. God is for you in the person Jesus, who was born among stinky animals and died humiliated and rose again, not for God, but for you. God is for you in the meal of bread and wine, surrounded by other people God is for, a meal of grace and mercy. And you know, God needs that meal about as much as God needs a fancy temple. But the temple wasn't for God, and the meal isn't for God either. It's for you. God is for you in waters of promise. God is for you in words of promise. God is for you through this community of grace called to serve, these tangible things you can see and hold and feel and taste, because, well, not because God needs any of it, but because we do. And God is for us. So here they are, folks. God gives all this to you, all of it to you, because God is for you. So don't forget it. There's a lot to that thick darkness we can't see, but this truth is shining bright. There's a lot of mystery in this life, but this is gospel. There's a lot of fear and scarcity in this world, but this is abundant. God is for you. Amen.